The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's The Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
All right, it's that time. Part two, episode number two. It's The Sour Hour. I'm Jay Goodwin. We're here at the Hop Grenade in downtown Concord, here with Moscow. How's it going?
It's going good, man. You know, we're looking an awful lot like brothers these days, you and me.
You're a good-looking man. That's a fact.
I only said that to get a compliment of you.
There you go.
I'm glad it worked.
Speaking of compliments, the lovely Bevo is here, too.
Hi, Bev.
Joining us in front of the glass, because there's some maintenance going on or something.
Oh, wait. Now go. I got to turn you
on. Is Bevo in here?
Oh, yes. Hi, there I am. Hi. Yes, I get to sit with you guys for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe the whole show. Who knows?
Maybe. Speaking of tonight's show, we're going to be talking to Lauren Salazar from New Belgium Brewing Company. Lauren is literally a sour beer legend, so it's a great honor to have her on. Anyone who's ever met Lauren knows that she's one of the very best people in an industry full of great people, so pretty excited to have her on tonight. For those of you who, you know, didn't get a chance to catch us last time, maybe this is the first time you're tuning in. This is the Sour Hour, and we're going to be talking about sour beer. So we're going to have on brewers, authors, homebrewers, microbiologists, bloggers, anyone who is involved in the process of sour beer. That's who we're going to talk to on this show. Along with that, you know, we're going to be chronicling some of my experiences. Just a reminder for those of you who listened before and those of you who didn't catch the first episode, I work at a brewery called The Rare Barrel. All we're doing there is making sour beer and memories. That's it. Those of you who visited our tasting room in Berkeley know what I'm talking about. Is there something special about walking into a place with like 6, 7, 8 sour beers on tap? And there's only a few places really in the world where you can get that. And, you know, we're proud to be one of them. So, you know, at the Rare Barrel, we're dealing with sour beer every day. It's all we talk about. You know, it's all people talk to us about. We do have other interests. So if you want to, you know, talk to us about football or something like that. I guess I only have two interests, football and sour beer. But, you
that's
know,
it, huh?
We're multidimensional. We're at least two-dimensional people. But, you know, the point is we experience sour beer on a daily basis. It's always on our minds. It's what we're talking about. So, you know, we want to share the knowledge, the bits of information we get from other people on this show. And we want this show to be, you know, one of the definitive resources for sour beer information, whether it's coming from our experiences at the Rare Barrel, secondhand from other breweries who are making great sour beer, or the guests that we have on the show. So we're excited to be here. You know, dedicating a special Brewing Network show just to sour beer is pretty exciting. I hope all you guys out there are excited, too.
Yeah, well, judging by the response, people are jonesing for a show like this. I think we got a lot of really advanced brewers out there who are starting to, or maybe even they've been doing it for a while, barrel aging and doing their own sour beers. And they are, you know, there's a lack of information out there, really, as we've noted. You know, there's been more and more information about beer in general in recent years, thanks to us and many other sources.
Absolutely.
And there's just not a lot of info about sour beer.
Yeah, the Brewing Network has been huge. And, you know, I'll see, you know, forum posts or people discussing sour beer making techniques. And the knowledge that people have today compared to, you know, when I was starting in brewing 6 years ago is astronomical. I mean, there are some incredibly talented homebrewers out there making great, really world-class sour beer that's on par or if not better than some of the commercial breweries making sour beer. So it's an exciting time to be a part of this, and we're happy to be doing it here on the Sour Hour. So on the first show, if you guys did not catch the first show, it's on iTunes now.
Yes.
So you go to iTunes. I think you are legally required to subscribe to it.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a requirement.
It's recent legislation.
Yes.
We do that a lot here in California.
Yeah, California, but then also federally. Because,
is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't follow that.
Well, there might be some people, you know, we had some callers. We had a couple callers, I think, from like North Carolina last show. So.
Yeah, yeah. Dallas. I think we hit every time zone in the last show.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Speaking of callers, you know, if you guys want to call us, same number as always, 888-401-BEER, or join us in the chat. We'll be taking some questions throughout the show. I know some people were emailing Scott some questions about barrel aging and sour beer or just general show feedback during the week. If you guys want to do that during the next week, scott@thebrewingnetwork.com. So show number one, we had Mike Tonsmeyer, literally wrote the book on sour beer. He's a great guest, wasn't he, Scott?
Yeah, he was great. If I brewed sour beer one by my, you know, on my own, I'd be all over that book. But I can barely dial in a pale ale at this point, so I think his book's a little out of my league. Actually, well, that's a good question. Is it out of your league if you're, you know, say you've only been brewing, you know, for a couple of few months, you've got a few batches under your belt, but you really love sour beer, and you maybe want to try and get into it even though you don't have a ton of brewing experience. Is that book going to be over your head, or is it friendly to beginners?
It's pretty friendly. I mean, it's taking you through the process. It's not going to talk about, you know, pediococcus bacteria in depth until it explains to you, you know, what pediococcus bacteria is. And, you know, sour beer can be intimidating, but, you know, brewing can be intimidating. You brew your first batch of beer and you kind of realize by the end of it, you're like, wow, I didn't know this is all that went into, you know, the pint that I get at the pub. But, you know, that's why, you know, everyone's listening to the show. It's because they do want to go to that next step. They want to make their own beer. They find something out there that they love, and they want to understand it on a deeper level. So I think the audience we're talking to is very motivated, and Mike's book is definitely an outstanding place to start. It's that rare combination of great place to start and maybe also the best resource out there. It's sort of, I'd compare it to John Palmer's How to Brew. That book is really great for beginners. It's kind of like as you go through that book, it gets more and more complicated. Same thing with Mike's book. It's a definitive resource.
Cool. And I saw a lot of people that bought that book on Amazon through our link. If you you can support all Brewing Network shows by clicking on the Amazon link on our homepage, doing all your shopping there as normal. Saw a lot of people that clicked through that link and bought Michael's book, maybe as a result of our show, maybe not. But in any case, I love to see that.
Yeah, definitely a great thing. Got to support the Brewing Network. You know, it's the reason we're on now, talking about sour beer. It's the reason that Mike was on last week. He definitely gave out some pretty good tidbits that are in the book and some stories that weren't. You know, we took some caller questions and discussed kind of more complex fermentations that are a little bit newer trends in the craft brewing industry. You know, one thing I really liked about our chat with Mike was he talked about how he likes to harvest bottle dregs from commercial examples of beer. And he had this line that was like, you know, you basically get yeast and bacteria with a resume. So, you know, his thinking was, you know, you buy Roselier blend from the lab and, you know, how are you supposed to know what that tastes like? There's no, you know, beer to go with it. But if you're harvesting dregs, like a caller from last week was from like a goose Tilken, then you're getting a free sample of the beer that yeast and bacteria has already made. You're also getting a more advanced version of these Brettanomyces, these lactic acid bacteria, and that's going to put you way ahead of the game. So I like all the stuff that he's doing with that. It's good if you're at home to, you know, kind of create and maintain your own house sour culture with the sour beers you're drinking anyway. And you can also go on Mike's blog, The Mad Fermentationist, to make sure that the bottles that you're drinking have harvestable dregs at the bottom. Some breweries will use, they might use a wine yeast to condition. They might flash pasteurize, which New Belgium does. I'm not sure if we'll get into that with Lauren too much, but, that's something you'll want to know, because if you go to harvest Breton bacteria from a bottle of La Folie, you're not going to get anything from it, because they make sure that bottle of beer is exactly how they wanted it at the time of blending. So they don't want flavors to continue to evolve when they're in the customer's hands. So
is it fair to say that most sour beers, that is not the case? They're going to be having action in the bottle?
I would say that's the case. Flash pasteurization.
Nice.
That's an expensive process, and you know, your typical small craft brewery is not going to have that kind of technology. But it's kind of the fun part of you know, New Belgium is that their regular beer program is growing, but so is their sour beer program. So they can use all the resources that were built by the Fat Tire Empire and use it on these little, what they call their Lips of Faith series beers, which include their sour beers. So they have this huge sensory program and advanced lab and so much resources to put into their sour program, when usually that's something that a small brewery would do with limited resources. So it's a lot of cool stuff coming out of New Belgium.
Well, you correct me if this is wrong, but it's not just a technology thing, right? Like a lot of breweries that maybe even if they had the technology to flash pasteurize, they wouldn't want to because they do want their sour beers to continue developing in the bottle.
Yeah, it depends what you want. So, you know, at the Rare Barrel, we bottle condition our beers. We don't filter or pasteurize. We view it as, you know, we're handing off the cellarmanship, if you will, you know, the overseeing of the sour beer from us to you when you buy a bottle of our beer. I think that's a fun part of sour beer is that, you know, people feel when they buy the bottle, they feel involved in the beer making process. And it's true. I mean, you take that bottle home, you keep it in good condition. You know, you're doing what we're doing. You know, you're seeing if it's better with age. Maybe you get, you know, multiple bottles and you're opening one when you get home, then 6 months later, then 2 years later, then 5 years later. That's a really fun thing that a lot of people are doing with sour beers. I think that enhances the experience. You know, on the flip side, I know I've had this conversation with Lauren many times, so I'm sure she'll be comfortable with me being her mouthpiece on this subject. She views it as, you know, she wants to lock in her blend. This is how she wants the beer to taste. This is the best possible time to harvest this beer from these barrels, and I want to lock it in so you guys drink it exactly how I imagine it being at its best. And it's also, you know, more stable that way. Things don't go wrong quite as often if you have that kind of stable product. With what we're doing at the Rare Barrel, there's certainly, you know, the opportunity for things to turn south. You know, we build our beers meticulously so that they don't do that. But, I mean, aged in harsh conditions for long periods of time, you know, sour beers can go bad just like any living product. So that's definitely a fun dynamic to talk to Lauren about. And, you know, she's got her view of it. And it's just nice that New Belgium has the capability to do that. So, you know, it's fun. It's to each his own. But it's a nice differentiator between their sour program and a lot of other breweries programs.
Is there no way to emulate that or to pasteurize without just expensive technology? Like if you were a home brewer and you wanted to lock your beer in place right when you bottled it and you didn't want it to change one bit, are you just, unless you have millions of dollars, you're out of luck?
You know, one kind of, I have not had much experience with filtration. I've never worked at a brewery that filtered their beer or pasteurized or anything like that. But one thing that comes to mind is, you know, just kegging it and keeping it cold. You know, you're going to get a little bit of development over time. But once the beer is in its final resting place and its final package and being kept cold, it's going to really inhibit the activity of lactic acid bacteria and Brettanomyces. So that'd be a nice way if you're really thinking, you know, this is all I want it to be. Okay, I'm going to cool it down, keg it, maybe bottle from kegs, you know, force carbonate it, and then just keep those bottles cold. Don't store them in a cellar temp condition where you might store, you know, a constantly evolving beer. Yeah, just keep it cold and kind of inhibit all that growth there.
Did you say, now I remember last show you were talking about your dry hopped sour, Egregious,
right?
Which, and we are drinking the inspiration for that beer. Is that right? This is La Terroir we got in our glasses from New Belgium, and it's along the same lines of dry hop sour.
Yeah, so one of our co-founders, Alex Walsh at the Rare Barrel, he loves dry hop sour beers. And whether it's Cantillon Iris or La Terroir, I wrote some other ones down that I didn't want to forget. There's one from Night Shift that I think just came out called Aurora, McKellar's Beetle Goose, Prairie made a beer called Funky Gold Mosaic down in in Texas at Jester King, they have a Das Wunderkind?
Yes.
Exclamation point.
We had that when they were on the show. It's a fantastic beer.
Yeah, all really good beers. It's a style that's really picking up a lot right now, and I think Les Terroirs blazed the trail on that one. There's just something about dry hop aroma that goes really nice with the acidity of a nice sour beer. I think it's some of the fruity characters of hops that can play in with the acidity of a sour beer that really just expresses itself magically. So Alex really loves Les Terroirs, and he was bugging me from day one to kind of brew, you know, a sour beer that was sort of like that. And our opening night, the first time we ever sold our beer was at a City Beer store in San Francisco. And so we have all our beers on tap for the first time. People are trying them for the first time. And I'm sitting there all night drinking fresh Les Terroirs that they have on tap because I was, oh, man, this is so good. And, you know, that was the chip in the wall for me. And I was like, okay, yeah, we got to make something like this.
I don't blame you at all for doing that. That's exactly the move I would pull. It just feels like sort of self-aggrandizing, doesn't it? To like sit there and drink your own beer. I mean, even though it isn't and nobody would look at it that way, I know that's how I would feel. Is that why, or is it just because Les Terroirs is that good?
It was that good. There's a little aspect of both, but yeah, Les Terroirs was tasting just right that night. And I was like, this is an amazing beer. And we brewed our beer, Egregious Dry Hop Sour, because of Les Terroirs. Because it's just, you know, if you can brew a beer that's somewhere kind of approaching the ballpark of that, you know, we'll be happy. And luckily, a lot of people have agreed. It's been one of our most popular beers at the tasting room, so it's been a lot of fun. In fact, we had an event at La Trappe in San Francisco that you were at, Scott, and JP, and Lauren was there.
Wood is good.
And we had a side-by-side tasting of Les Terroirs and Egregious.
That's right.
And there was a brief moment there where Lauren and I looked at each other because we had both in our hands at the same time. And it was kind of like just this, if only for a split second, which one is which?
Oh,
and it was just
sure.
Like one of the best moments of my life.
Oh, because totally.
I was just like, I mean, we figured it out. But just that there was a slight hesitation meant so much that, you know, we were at least that close. That's huge. I mean, that in and of itself was an accomplishment.
Now, I bring up that beer, A, because it's in our glass, but B, because as it pertains to what we were just talking about, I remember you saying that beer is sort of constantly evolving, right? Like one week it's, you know, sort of more dank, and the next week it's sort of more acidic, and those aren't the words you use, but that it's kind of, it's a chameleon, I believe is what you said. And so is that beer, it's in kegs in your cold box, is
mm-hmm.
it not?
Yeah.
Now, but it is changing, and so... You know, what is the explanation? Is it that beer, or is it just because you are going to have changes, but they're just subtle?
It's the hops. So it's dry hopping. So just like, you know, double IPA is going to change over the course of a few weeks. You know, I'm sure you guys have noticed that at the Hop Grenade here. Actually, you probably haven't because you're selling beer so fast here.
Can't keep it on.
The crowds are just going crazy. So you don't know what, you know, old hoppy beer is like here.
Nope.
But let me tell you. When it's a few weeks old, a few months old, you know, the hop character starts to change exponentially over time. So that's really where that beer changes. We do keep it cold. We don't have it in bottles. It's a draft-only beer. So I apologize to people listening who won't be able to try it unless they come to Berkeley or Concord when we have it at the Hop Grenade. But yeah, that's really what's changing with that beer. But they're both a lot of fun, and we'll talk to Lauren a little bit more about that. One more thing I wanted to get to before we take a quick break is another connection the Rare Barrel has to Lauren is just the story behind our name. You know, the Rare Barrel. What does that mean, basically? And the Rare Barrel for us is a mission. We feel like you know, there's this idea of, you know, every sour beer brewery has this dream barrel somewhere in their brewery. And we're excited by that because we've heard a specific story about Lauren and a dream barrel that we'll talk to her about in a little bit. But
ooh, titillating.
Our program at the Rare Barrel is basically every year we're going to search our warehouse for the best barrel of beer that we have. So we're going to do this for the first time next year, and we're going to pick out the best barrel we have. We're going to invite other brewers, sommeliers, cicerones, maybe some Brewing Network listeners, ? You know, we want to get people involved and come in and taste our beer in the early process and basically help us pick out which barrel in our warehouse is going to be the 2015 rare barrel. That's where the name comes from, is that it's this allusion to this search where, you know, we're striving to experiment enough that we have so much variety that we'll kind of hit on some of these in such a special way that we're going to get this special barrel. And what we're going to do when we find it is pick it out, serve it in the tasting room during a party, unblended, so only that single barrel. And then we're going to take that empty barrel and use it to propagate its specific yeast and bacteria forward into future batches. So every year, that year's rare barrel will go on to make other beers made by the rare barrel. And in that way, we're always trying to build on our greatest successes. It's kind of like evolution in an oak barrel.
Yeah. It's basically what it's what they've done with pot strains over the past generation.
I don't
generation.
Know anything about that.
Well, neither do I. I'm just, I've read about it.
Oh, in books?
Yeah, and apparently it's gotten stronger in recent decades, and it's because, according to this
like
article...
It's used for rope, right? So the rope is stronger?
Yeah, exactly. It can support like 10 times the weight it could in the 60s.
Okay.
And that's because they used, you know, the best, and then they spliced it in with the other really good one, and then that one became the mother of the whatever, and then now you have these, you know, ropes that can just lift the Buick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible ropes.
Yeah. But that's just really the same. It's the same concept, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about always getting better, always moving forward. And, you know, we try to do that with all our beers anyway. But just to have this overarching program going on at the Rare Barrel, that's just a fun goal to have. And we'll get into that program is basically, we named the brewery. We started this program all after a story that Lauren is intimately involved with. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But, hey. Feel free to join the conversation with us. Call us, 888-401-BEER. Join the chat and ask us some questions. I think we'll get to some in a little bit. But, yeah, well, let's take a couple-minute break. I need to drink some more of my Le Terroir and just get ready to talk to Lauren Salazar from New Belgium Brewing Company. This is the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, this is Jamel Zanishev, and I love a bold, hoppy beer, one that spits resin in your face and makes you cry, uncle. There are a lot of great hoppy beers out there, but at Heretic, we want to make something as bold, dank, and resiny as possible. We use hops at every chance we get, including multiple dry hop additions. The result is Heretic Evil Cousin. This light golden, 8% Imperial IPA has an easy malt character that helps take the edge off the massive bittering, but it takes a back seat to the in-your-face hop character. We make sure this beer finishes dry so the hops can jump out and slam you in the taste buds. If you can't get enough hoppy goodness, Evil Cousin is your cup of tea. Cheers.
Back. It's the Sour Hour coming to you live from the Hop Grenade in downtown Concord. It's going to be a great show tonight. Just really excited.
You can feel it in your bones, huh?
Yeah. Lauren's on in just a little bit. We're drinking her beer, Le Terroir, Dry Hop Sour. One of the beers that inspired us at the Rare Barrel. Super exciting. You can join us in the conversation about sour beer and how awesome it is. 888-401-BEER or join us in the chat. Do we have any questions so far, Scott?
Yeah, well, let's do a couple of questions that we got via email during the week. And the first one is from Brewing Up Trouble. And he says, Jay, how do you prepare the Rare Barrel's barrels for sour beer? What's your preparation?
The Rare Barrel's barrels. Good question. And, you know, let me just start by saying, I think this is one of the most important steps in sour beer making, and it's often neglected. It's kind of not really the sexy part of sour beer making is kind of the preparation. But basically it starts with an inspection of the barrel. Doesn't matter what kind. You want to inspect the outside for cracks and breaks. If there's any spiles in the barrel, which is kind of like a, what is it like? Like a toothpick on steroids, kind of plugging hole, like a plug on the outside that's plugging a previous hole. You're basically looking for anything that's going to cause a leak in the barrel. Leaks in barrels are very bad. They can introduce oxygen. They, you know, let beer hit the floor and you're losing beer. And then the worst part is you have to clean up that mess. And that's just like such a pain. If you don't know what's going on, it gets all sticky. Fruit flies come over. And then the fruit flies, they want to get in the barrel. Yeah, fruit flies are bad enough. But then they want to get in the barrel and really drink all the sour beer. But with them, they're going to carry Acetobacter, which is going to ruin the whole barrel. So it's just like all these issues are in play. So that's kind of the exterior part of the barrel prep. Then look inside the barrel. Get a flashlight, shine it around, look for foreign objects. You know, I don't know what's in there, but you want to take them out. Sometimes a winemaker will use oak inserts. So there's like weird oak and plastic in there. Yeah, you're going to want to get that out before you put beer in there. Smell it, make sure it smells good. And then you're going to want to fill it with a water solution. So that's going to confirm that not only do you not have leaks in the barrel, but it's also going to preserve the barrel until you're ready to fill it. So you're going to want to do for about a standard size wine barrel, and this will go pretty equivalent to bourbon barrels too, but it's about 1 pound of potassium made by sulfite. And you can get this at More Beer, some of your local homebrew shops. So check around for that. And then a 1/2 pound of citric acid. Top it off with cold water, and that's going to be your storage solution. Be good up to four to six months when you're ready to fill it. Turn it upside down, get all that out of there. Make sure you can rinse it thoroughly because you don't want that kind of leftover sulfur flavor and aroma in your beer.
How intensive of a wash do you need? Like, are you talking a pressure washer, a garden hose, a trickle?
It's great if you can do pressure. What we use is sort of like a thin barrel spinning head with a pump. You know, you could probably use some boiling water if you don't have access to that. You can steam. Steam will work well, but pressure is going to be really good. Pressure and temperature will work wonders. And then the last thing I want to mention is just flush the barrel with carbon dioxide before introducing any beer to it, because you don't want excessive oxygen pickup when you put your beer in there. You know, slow introduction of oxygen is what you're looking for through the staves of the barrels over time, but not an excessive introduction of oxygen right up front.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you want to, we'll get to more questions a little bit later, but I'm jonesing for some Lauren.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That sounds great.
Hi, Lauren.
Lauren, are you there?
I sure am.
How's it going?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing really good. Thanks for joining us on the Sour Hour. Are you getting all prepped for the Great American Beer Festival next week?
Yeah, we being from Denver, being from Colorado, we prep, you know, for 6 months prior.
So you're never not prepping?
We're never not prepping. GABF comes every year to Colorado, and it's, you know, it's kind of the biggest thing that could possibly happen to your state, and it happens every year, and we take it pretty seriously. Hosting the entire brewing community is a big deal for us.
Yeah, and you guys blow it out. There's always great parties at the brewery, and then you'll have events going on in Denver. Maybe just take a quick step back and give a little background info on Lauren. And Lauren, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. You've been moving up the ranks so fast, it's kind of hard to keep track of your latest job title. But basically, I think what you do is you manage the wood cellar, you blend sour beer, and you have already developed one of the best sensory analysis programs in the country at New Belgium. Sound about right?
Thanks. Yeah. and I am the specialty brand manager. So I do Lips of Faith, Hop Kitchen, all those beers as well.
And you're traveling around quite a bit to promote those, right?
I do. I also have a program that I run called Road Brewer at New Belgium. And that basically... we have 34 amazing brewers, and it, you know, there's only so many times people want to see me, you know, at, you know, La Trappe. And so they're like, really, that's the only person that works at New Belgium. So we send the, cooler, younger, hipper brewers out, and to be able to kind of be with, be in Minneapolis, be in Atlanta, and, And I think that that's kind of, that's, it's my, succession plan of, you know, like when I first started getting on the road, I would go on the road about 20 times a year. And I, you know, I'm not getting any younger.
Well, you could just grow a beard, Lauren. You'd be right back in there with the in crowd.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly. But I'm not that hip. I'd accidentally grow a goatee.
So, Lauren, we're sitting here at the Hop Grenade, and we're drinking a delicious beer. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Le Terroir.
I think it's Terrier.
It's the dog.
The Terrier.
That's the nickname for it at the brewery.
Oh, is it really?
Grady Hull calls it the dog.
Awesome. I like it. I'm going to start calling it the dog. Like one of the cool kids. So what's the story behind this beer, Lauren? How do you make this beer? How did this idea come up? What are the dry hops in it? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. And by the way, thanks for having me. It's real psyched. I'm sitting in my backyard. I took the day off because it was 75 degrees and nice. Gorgeous in Fort Collins. I took the day off and I'm sitting here drinking a beer on my back patio with my dogs, and thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you. Are they terriers?
They are not. No. I have mutts. the Le Terroir, it kind of came to be, I was doing a hop selection one year, and for one of the first years Amarillo came out, and you know, that first year, it was just, gosh, I mean, it probably was one of the best things I'd ever smelled. It literally smelled like mangoes and, you know, papaya and just all the juiciest of tropical fruits. And I am not a big IPA fan because I don't love bitter. I really enjoy sweet, malty, sour is really where my pendulum swings. And I was telling, you know, the rest of the guys at Hop Selection, I was like, I want to drink this. And then about a little bit later, I was tasting through barrels, and I was tasting through number four, who I now call hops. I just call the barrel hops because I was tasting it, and the fooder, and she had just had this beautiful fruity mango, like, and all of a sudden I was like, that's exactly like that moment where I smelled Amarillo for the first time. And so I emailed a couple people. I actually emailed Matt Brindelson because I was like, he knows everything about hops. And I'm like, can you dry hop a sour beer? And he was like, I guess, you know, like, I don't know. basically, the short answer, you know, he always is very thorough and thoughtful and kind with his answers and information, and basically he said, I'm sure. Why not?
You stumped him.
So, well, I mean, he kind of was like, why wouldn't you be able to? And I was like, I don't know. I'm asking you. You're a hop chemist. I am not. And so I just took a carboy of number four, got some Amarillo pellets, and dry hopped a carboy, and then just basically threw it and tasted it a couple days later. And I was like, this is good. And that was it. And I actually tasted it, forgot about it. And then 2 months later, I was walking through because I pushed it behind and I looked at it and I'm like, oh, that is the carboy was sitting there. And I was like, ooh, what is that? And then I was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. I had that great idea. So I almost forgot immediately.
So was it still tasting good at that point or?
No, no. Actually, I think that's when Eric gave me a lecture about cellar cleanliness.
What was wrong with it? What about it tasted bad?
Well, I had just kind of left it there. I had opened, you know, so I'd taken the pressure lock off, you know, taken the hops out, tasted the beer, threw everything kind of just back on there. And so it basically was vinegary, terrible.
And Lauren, I noticed that you referred to one of your barrels as she. You know, you've got a special relationship with the barrels and the fooders in your wood cellar. But I wanted to ask you about one in particular and the story behind it. I was teasing the listeners last segment a little bit about how the rare barrel is actually named after a story that you are heavily involved in. Can you tell us the story of PH1?
I can. And I will say that this this story, the day that it happened, it was probably one of the most fun days I've ever had. I was going to brewing school at UC Davis, and we had a free day, and Cody Reif, who is the pilot brewer at New Belgium and a really great friend of mine, we were going to class together, and so is Michael Payne. He works at Napa Smith. I think he just moved, but we were all taking class together, and Michael Payne was going to be our designated driver to Russian River, and we... of course, had the best day ever, sampled beers, did all this. We bumped into Natalie and Vinny, and they brought us in the back. And in the beginning of our cellar program in 98, we had 7 barrels. And we've always named barrels. They just weren't as fun as the names today. And we had INOC 1, you know, Inoculation 1, Inoculation 2, OCA, which is Old Cherry Ale, a beer A and B, and we had the 2 barrels called PH1 and PH2, and there are in, and then we had one called Alcohol, because we put a bottle of Everclear in it to see the effects of higher alcohol on the bug colony. And so when we started getting more and more and more small barrels, one day Peter came to the wood cellar, and he said, I have purchased a fooder, and I had never heard that word before. He looked really excited. So, and he came in with 4 60 hectoliter fooders, these beautiful, gorgeous, large upright barrels. And as we started getting more of these larger fooders, 100 hectoliters all the way to 220, over time, I didn't really need the smaller barrels anymore. So, Peter said he wanted to give a bunch away, Peter Buchart, my brewmaster. And so he said, go through all of the barrels and write what you want to do with them. And so I said, okay, I'm going to write keep, blend, or dump. Because at that point I'd kind of let a lot of barrels go. I'm sad to say, ashamed to say, to vinegar. And, I just, you know, it was like, oh, we'll dump those and kind of get rid of them. And he said, okay, I'll take all the ones that you want to dump, and I'll give them away. And I'm like, that's, you know, very altruistic of you. And so, you know, as they went away, I noticed that a couple of my favorite barrels, the original 7, were gone. But I didn't really think much about it. And so that the day at Russian River, we were literally playing cornhole in the middle of the barrels. You know, greatest day ever, and drinking off of the barrels at Russian River, you know, not bragging, just happened. and I looked over and I saw my handwriting that said a word that said keep, and then under it said PH1. And I was so excited to see it. I had been missing it so much, and I was like really excited. And Vinny like looked over at me. And I was like, "Oh my God, PH1! I've missed you so much. Where have you been?" And then my next idea was to beat Peter, because I knew that he did it, but he totally denied it. Vinny was, you know, he thought it was hilarious that I was so excited about just seeing it. And a while goes by, and Vinny calls and said, "Hey, Lauren, I sent you a case of beer." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, yes, beatification." And you know what? I feel like a jerk. It's been 2 days since I've gotten it. You're amazing. The beer is phenomenal. Of course, it probably is like some of the best beer I've ever had in my entire life. Please forgive me. And he was like, "Is that it?" And I'm like, "Yeah. You're the greatest, probably the best sour beer producer in the world. What else?" And he was like, "Lauren, look at the bottle." And literally in like font 1.5 around the label is the story of us coming to the brewery. I mean, like it's a story around a tiny 375 mil bottle. So you can understand how small this font is. And I all of a sudden realized that it had my name, Lauren Salazar, and I was like, my name is on a Russian River label. And I was like, all right, I'm retiring right now. This is the best thing that's ever happened. But it was PH1, it was beatification the first time. And it just became like this barrel kind of has a life of its own. And it kind of is a legend all in itself, only because Vinny tells the story at like conferences and stuff. And, you know, I shed a tear every time. And about 3 weeks ago, one of our beer rangers or sales guys calls me and he was like, hey, Lauren, are you at the brewery? I'm like, I am. And he was like, get somebody to take a picture of you because I'm about to walk in the door. And I'm like, okay. And so I walked in or this guy walked in and Vinny had shipped PH1 back to us. So
nice.
It was pretty fun. Yeah. So the barrel lives on. We hydrated it really quick, popped it open and, you know, puffed it out and threw some beer in it. And we'll see what happens. I doubt it'll be anything like beatification, but.
So what did you put in it?
Felix. Just my favorite Felix barrel at the time, which was 22. She's kind of my fave right now.
Awesome. Yeah, I've always loved that story. I've probably asked Lauren to retell it, you know, 4 or 5 times already.
When Vinny tells it, it's better because he makes me sound like a total spaz. And
you skip the part about, you know, you running around New Belgium and yelling
out,
at Peter.
Yeah, I did kind of freak out.
I love that.
But it was a good reunion, and you know, he's a good boy. And it's just like, it's just as fun. You know, he sent it back, and I hope to do something fun with it. It's like the smallest collaboration that's not really a collaboration in the world.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to start paying closer attention to the late, because I think I've read the one they do that on Pliny. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that super small typeface,
right,
around the, and it's like, you know, stop being you know, stop meandering and drink this beer now, you dumbass. Don't let it age, you know. And it's like a novel, and I'll have to start reading them all, because I guess you never know what you're gonna find. You might find your own name.
Yeah.
Well, I had given away a couple of those bottles, and I'm like, whoa. So, you know, my giveaway, you know, 4 or 5 in the brewery. And so I was like, hey, I'm not taking this back, but if you're going to recycle this bottle, give it back to me. And my old boss, the QA director, has it on his desk still, and which just makes me happy too. But I have one on my desk.
Yeah, I love that story. And then, you know, that's why we named our brewery the Rare Barrel. This idea that there is this, you know, magic mix of yeast and bacteria that can produce not only great beer at New Belgium, but then to start the beatification program at Russian River. I mean, think of how much awesome beer has come from this one barrel. And that's to hear that story and be inspired like we were, you know, we kind of just decided, you know, this has to be the name of our brewery, because this is what we want to be about too. We want to pay homage to Vinny and Lauren, who have pioneered so much in the American craft beer and sour beer scene. And it also just kind of speaks to this striving for, you know, perfection. You'll never get there, but, you know, just to look for, you know, happy accidents and the perfect mix of, you know, what you're feeling, it just sometimes it works out great. And, you know, just trying to propagate that forward is awesome.
What do you guys think it is? I mean, is it just truly magic? I guess it's a living thing, and maybe you can't really put it into words, or maybe there are no words. But what is it that varies? You know, what do you think it is about any given magic barrel? It is just a mix of bacteria and such, and you can never really. It just happens.
I think my favorite barrel. I think she just knows that she's the best. I think that she just is showing off constantly. Like, she just kind of knows that she's the best barrel in the world. We call her Sure Thing, and it's like she's on stage all the time. She just performs. I kind of, she's a little bit of a show off.
They just have a mind of their own, huh?
Right when you think that you're the boss, and you know, we call ourselves. You know, it's funny, somebody gave me the title wood cellar manager, and I'm like, oh yeah, right. I don't manage anything in there. Your job is caregiver. You know, you're doing whatever that they need you to do. So yeah, I would say that it is magic. I laughed. I was listening earlier. You guys were talking about how, you know, we have all this amazing technology, and some of it I use. I really, you know, I love, you know, I'm probably the poster child of pasteurization. Even though I hate it, I hate being that person. I hate when everybody walks up to me and I'm like, I know what they're about to ask me, and it's not going to be about barrels. But it's okay. I'll just stand alone with the torch. It's fine. The concept of the technology at New Belgium is we don't use any of it. You know, we don't use the QA. We don't use sensory. I'm kind of a jerk like that. We have a mass spectrometer, a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer with the olfactory sniff port, and I don't use it at all. I do ABV and that's it. In the wood cellar, the rest of it is just me tasting. I just make sure the TTB likes it when I hit the ABV, and that's about it.
That's awesome. Well, Lauren, I want to get a little more into all your sour beer blending techniques and kind of your secrets at New Belgium.
But, and we have a couple of beers to taste that you guys were kind enough to send us.
Not just Le Terroir, but what else do we have? We've got the Creek, right?
Yes.
And then a secret, top secret beer that
yeah.
was sent.
Yeah, I think you guys have MBB Loves Leopold, right?
We do.
We just said it was top secret, Lauren.
Yeah,
Jesus.
But, yeah. There's going to be a whole thing, but now.
Terrible at good secrets. Bad secrets to my grave. Good secrets, done.
But we'll come back. We'll ask you a few more questions if you can hang with us, Lauren. And I think we got some questions from the chat. Can you hang in there with us, Lauren?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Lauren Salazar of New Belgium Brewing. This is the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Are you a member of the American Homebrewers Association? Well, you should be. Members of the AHA can focus on brewing beer, and the AHA takes care of the rest. The American Homebrewers Association advocates on behalf of homebrewers like you to legalize the hobby in all 50 states and make sure that beer laws make sense. Plus, there are many great benefits that come with your AHA membership, like pub discounts that give you awesome deals at bars, restaurants, breweries, and more. Zymergy Magazine and eZymergy for tons of articles, how-tos, easy-to-follow recipes, and news about the hobby you love. And access to the members-only content on homebrewersassociation.org. But the AHA can't do it without your support. Join today so the American Homebrewers Association can keep fighting for your home brewing rights. Visit homebrewersassociation.org or join right now from the homepage of the Brewing Network website. Relax. Don't worry. It's the American Homebrewers Association.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to morebeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer. Bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Sour Hour. My name is Jay Goodwin here with Moscow and Vivo. Tonight's guest is Lauren Salazar, sour beer genius from New Belgium Brewing Company. We're drinking another beer from New Belgium now. It is the Transatlantic Creek, which is sort of like the name implies, comes from Belgium and then is blended with one of your beers. Is that right, Lauren?
It is. It's a strong lager, actually. We kind of have no part of the sour because it is Frank Bone's lambic, or sorry, Creek cherry lambic, and far be it from us to even try to go there. So we brew a strong golden and basically blend it kind of for a beautiful blender. Yeah, it's probably one of the coolest things that I've ever done as a brewer is be involved in that blend.
I was just saying off air to Scott how cool of an idea that is. And just like a cross ocean collaboration. That,
right.
That just.
Oh, we did the first one in 2003 with him. I have that's my biggest beer crush in the world is Frank Bone. I think he's, I know that sounds weird, but I get completely, I've met him probably, you know, 10, 11 times. I was just there last year. Again, was with him, a friend of mine, Carl Kins from Belgium. He's amazing. We went around Belgium. I was there for a week and he hosted me and we went everywhere and we were there for 6 hours. And I, the whole time, for six entire hours inside of my body, I was like, I cannot believe that I'm like, I mean, who knows what he was actually saying? Oh, gems, words of wisdom, but I could not get out of my head that he was sitting right next to me.
Starstruck.
I mean, I was so starstruck when I'm around him. But I, you know, so he sends, Creek over and these big, at this point now, like these kind of big, totes. But the first couple times we did it, we, actually put it in dairy tankers and, you know, it's filtered, but it's still very much a live product. And, you know, we got a call from the, you know, it's coming towards us. We get a call from the Texas State Patrol. And apparently this truck got pulled over because every once in a while it would build up so much pressure in the tanker that it would, the pressure relief valve would trip. And a giant, as the guy said, the trooper said, I love this reference, a VW bus size plume of pink foam would come flying out of the top of this tanker and just about kill everybody. And I remember like thinking to myself, what that person, you know, like the, like that's how you're gonna die. Like you're going down the highway and you just see this VW size, you know, size pink foam thing that's gonna crush you. And you know, we were giggling on the phone and he was not as amused about it. So we just were like, you know, just put a stick and keep the pressure off and just haul ass, get over here. That's kind of my favorite transatlantic story.
Nice. That seems like an extreme example of the kind of blending you guys do there. What's more of your typical approach when it comes to blending at New Belgium and just your guys' overall philosophy on, you know, marrying flavors together when you're, you know, comparing all these fooders and these different base beers?
Blending. I like that question a lot when they're like, how do you know when it's time to blend, a barrel, or you know, like just the whole concept of blending. And I asked that question in the beginning. I think it was, you know, in like 1999. I was talking to Peter, you know, about the concept of blending and when to blend. And you know, that's just, it seems like a question you can just ask. And I remember he answered just like he normally does in this totally cryptic, you know, four words that don't really go together. And he just told me, but this time he just looked at me and he said, and I was like, how do you know when it's time to blend? And he just said, you know. I was like, thanks. That's awesome. You're the brewmaster from Rodenbach. I was really hoping it'd be more than a two word answer. But no, it's true. You just kind of know. And so the concept of, as you're tasting through barrels, I always kind of have this, an end point in my mind. I like to put deadlines on myself and I don't ever tell anybody my deadlines. But I'd like to think about a volume I'm trying to make and a kind of time I'm thinking about making it in a flavor profile. And as we're kind of going towards that, I think about, you know, I'll taste your barrels and I kind of know what role each barrel will play in the blend. I like to play around with the barrels. We have a blend tank, a stainless blend tank. So I have the ability to, if a barrel is becoming a little bit more sour than I'd like, too fast, if it was a smaller barrel or a older kind of really mature barrel that acidifies really fast, I can pull some of that beer out, put it in stainless tank, and then take a barrel that's not progressing fast as I'd like and put it into that barrel and kind of give it that sour. And so I kind of like to manipulate ages, and I'm kind of sneaky like that. And I like if I really like what one barrel is doing, I'll take that and pull some of that out and I'll take it and give it to another barrel. So I'm constantly thinking about the end result and then kind of moving stuff around. I try not to over manage, like, you know, micromanage my barrels, but I really like the concept of being able to give them, if they're kind of like misbehaving, kind of giving them a better example of what I would like them to do. It's a suggestion.
So let's talk, Lauren, about this creek. Walk us through the process once, you know, you were just how it's made. Step one.
Oh, Transatlantic Creek?
Yeah.
That's pretty easy. Frank Bone sends us creek, beautiful, amazing creek. We try not to drink all of it. And it is amazing. Every single brewer, production worker in the whole brewery knows the day that it comes. We're all standing there with little taster glasses. We're like, please, I just want one little sip. And then we move that into a vessel. And then we basically we brew something called bean, which just means bone. Bone means bean in English. So we brew a bean, which is a strong lager. And we'll literally taste the bone. We think about the blend. A lot of times we'll manipulate the bean brew just at the last second. We'll mess with malt ratios or mashing or depending on like the flavor of the creek. And that's kind of that's our fun part of it, is to try to think about, like, if it's sweeter, we'll mess with the finished gravity, we'll mess with the mashing regimen to try to come up with a drier beer to blend. If it's really tart, we'll kind of like maybe do the opposite. And then, you know, blend, carbonate. That's it. That's it. You know, getting a creek through customs, that's really the hardest part.
Lauren, you've had so many successes coming from the new Belgium Sour program. What are some of the big mistakes you guys have made over the years? Or what do you think are some common mistakes that, you know, in general, sour beer brewers make?
Whenever someone says, what's your weakness? It's like your weakness and your strength or whatever. I would say that there's one thing. People either don't wait long enough or wait too long. A lot of times people sample too much from their barrels. You'll get a big giant headspace, creates a really great environment for Acetobacter. So that's sampling too much, sampling too often, and then you'll end up with a sour beer. Yes. Not the one you intended, or just not waiting long enough, and they're kind of being in an intermediary stage where a lot of esters and other things are kind of have been pulled apart and maybe not put back together by the love of Brettanomyces. I would say the second thing is waiting too long. That's kind of what I've been seeing lately, is the biggest flaw, I think, in a lot of people's beers. You know, people will tell me that they have a beer that's been aged in a wine barrel for 3 years, 4 years, and in an environment that's not perfect for that barrel. So therefore, it will absolutely take on very heavy vinegar notes. And that, there's something to be said about, I understand extreme sour, but it has to be the right sour.
I think a lot of homebrewers have been used to hearing, taste your beer, you know, see where it's at, right. Always be, you know.
So true. That's so true. Well, so I never thought about that.
Is there a rule of thumb then for how often you should be doing that so you're not doing it too much and creating that headspace and ruining your beer, but you're also able to monitor it effectively?
Well, we at New Belgium, we have this amazing luxury of a thing called a fooder. You know, and it's, you know, there are 100 hectoliters, 220 hectoliters. They're monsters. And so I can, and there's just me. So I can't really, I sample about once every month, every couple months each. I kind of walk through them about, I taste everybody at least once every 3 months. And, but if you're just if you're one brewer with one barrel, you know, a home brewer with a barrel, you know, it's just almost impossible to not taste. You know, it's just making sure that you have the vinny nail in the bottom and you're tasting from the side and the liquid and not the top. And I think that you just have to get to know you're going to find a time, wait for a while, 3 months, whatever, that you'll find, depending on the size of your barrel. And once you find that it is progressing, you know, like that's when you kind of have to really think about it. It really has to do with like size, surface area. Because if you're thinking about a 60-gallon small barrel, I don't know, when's the first time you taste it? Like 3 months was usually the first time I'd ever taste a barrel.
3 months is a good spot. You know, we do the vinny nail. We take we're kind of interested in what's happening in the first 3 months. We actually take samples, not so much for tasting, but we test gravity and pH. We take readings on gravity, pH, and temperature every 10 days to 2 weeks about. But
that's right.
One big initial investment for the brewery was a density meter, which is basically like a fancy version of a hydrometer jar and hydrometer. And what we can do with that is we can take a small sample. We can have just a tiny, tiny bit of beer, and it'll tell us how much sugar is left in it. So we're not wasting huge amounts of beer by, you know, checking in on it every 10 days. We're doing the same thing with pH. Both of these instruments can also read temperature. So, I'm always checking the tops of the barrels to see, you know, how much headspace there is.
We do that for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, fooders, there's a big, you know, there can be a big open space on top. So you definitely have to monitor that. We're at the Rare Barrel, we're actually doing a 3-year aged beer. But the way we're doing it is a little bit different. We're not topping off, but we are brewing a beer. It's our first batch. It's batch number one. Uh-huh. We brewed it, put it into barrels, and then a year later, we brewed the same recipe again, and then took all those barrels back and put them into our blending tank, and then refilled oak barrels up to the top. So they're not really sitting for too long of a time with a big headspace due to evaporation or sampling or anything like that. So
that's the thing is that's a really great solution to that problem.
Yeah. It's tough. You can't really leave a beer in a barrel for 3 years without doing something with it. Just, you know, wherever you are, evaporation is going to take its toll.
When people talk about angel share, it's so great in whiskey. You know, it's amazing. It's, you know, condensing, intensifying of flavors, and it's like the opposite. You know, it's the devil. It really is the worst thing that could happen to a sour barrel.
Definitely. And so, Lauren, I think luckily enough, New Belgium is one of the biggest sour beer producers in the United States. So some of the people listening have probably tried Late Terroir. If not, they should. Then also Transatlantic Creek.
Did you say it was the biggest?
Are you the biggest, Lauren?
Everyone wants me to say that, and I just...
Just the best, then.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like that... I mean, I know that there's a couple places with... I mean, who knows how many bourbon county style barrels there are, and I mean, I don't know. I worry about things like saying things like the largest... we have 64 fooders and right around 8,000 barrels right now. so of wood capacity. So
I'm going to go ahead and say that's the biggest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know what, Lauren? Just start going, you know what? I'm the hottest chicken beer. We make more sour beer than anyone in the universe. Just, you know, even if
I'm
it isn't true.
I'll just use all the superlatives. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Just all at once. Right. I'm a megalomaniac. Yeah. I just cannot stop.
But the best part about that is, you know, sour beer is, you know, a precious commodity. People have trouble finding it most of the time. Luckily, you guys are really getting it out there with your distribution network. And, you know, this, even though the volume of your sour beer pales in comparison to your regular beer production, you know, you guys are putting a lot of sour beer out there. But one thing people don't really get a chance to try is your kind of special small projects. And we've actually got one of them here, which is what you alluded to earlier, the NBB Love. Can you tell us a little bit about this beer?
Well, what you have is NBB Loves Leopold. And that is whenever there's like a barrel... The way that I kind of like to denote, I've had the same notebook that I've been writing in. It's the only thing that I keep any kind of track of the barrels. I've had it since 2000. And I only have a couple more pages left in it. I'm getting a little anxious. But
that's before they had iPads, right?
It helps me. I like to be able to look, you know, like flip pages and look back at what the barrels were doing. And I write little notes like check on pixie dust. Like she, you know, like do this, do that. And so I write myself little notes and kind of gives me a so I always feel like I know what's going on, even though I'm not in charge. I know, at least I feel like I understand what's going on in there. And every once in a while I'm tasting a beer and I'll write little notes in there. And I'll write little hearts next to the fooder and I'll usually like will pull if I just find a fooder. You know, the concept of making sour beer is blending. It's making sour beer is easy, and you know, just deplete all the sugars, you have sour beer. But it's really very single, and it's all the blend is all the fun part is taking that sour and building complexity without completely destroying like the what you're kind of like the whole point of it. And but every once in a while, you'll be tasting a barrel, and you're like, this is it. Like, this barrel is unbelievable on its own, that single barrel, the rare barrel kind of thing. And we'll pull some of that beer off, and I just literally we'll just shake carbonation into it, and we'll sell it or just drink it in the tasting room. We call it NBB Love. And so it's like NBB Love Oscar. That's our dark base beer, or NBB Love Feel It. NBB Love Felix, that's the light base beer. But we'll take now we'll find those barrels, and we get barrels from Leopold Brothers Distillery in Denver, who I will just say another superlative, the best
there you go
the distillery in the world. They're absolutely, in my humble opinion, I think that these guys, Todd and Scott Leopold, the Leopold Brothers, are, I mean, they are the paramount of what's happening in craft distilling. And we get we have the really huge honor of being able to get sole kind of rights to their fruited whiskey barrels. And they do really proper, like beautiful whiskey, and then they'll fruit it with real fruit, apple whiskey, pear, peach whiskey, blackberry whiskey, and cherry whiskey. And it's this blackberry whiskey barrels. We'll put the one beautiful Love Oscar. He'll call and say, "Hey, I'm going to dump, you know, the 12 barrels," and we get them on a truck within the hour. they come up to Fort Collins, and we're ready. They're waiting, and so within like a 12 to 20 hour period of dump, the whiskey dump, like we'll actually have them full. So it is like this relationship that I hold like kind of like it was one of my the things I hold dearest and to my heart is our relationship with those guys to get these barrels, because you know finding a really good barrel source and a supplier who cares and you have a intimate relationship with is becoming harder and harder and harder, and is the number one thing about our production.
At the aforementioned What Is Good event, this beer was on, right, Jay?
That's correct.
Yeah. So now, Lauren, is this the same batch?
That might be. Because I'm making, he's been giving me cherry whiskey barrels because he just started making cherry whiskey. He hails from Michigan. So it just only goes to show. I mean, only is right that he makes a cherry whiskey. And so I bet that was. And it's luscious what it does. And it's fun because people always think like there's no fruit added to it. It is the fruit that you get only comes from the barrel that has held blackberry whiskey. And I swear you can taste blackberry in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's there.
For sure. Nice whiskey background notes. It's well in balance. There's, you know, a little acidity. It's really an amazing beer. Is this, you know, if someone's in Fort Collins or let's say someone's coming out, you know, there's a lot of people listening who might be, well, maybe a lot of people listening is an overstatement. There might be a few people listening who may also be going to GABF.
You didn't listen to my advice to Lauren. We have every single person on the planet listening.
Oh, yeah. This is the best podcast ever. Episode 2.
There you go.
But, you know, if they're going to be in town, you know, for GABF, will this beer be there? Do you guys have some specialty?
At the festival.
Wow. On the floor?
Privileged.
Yeah, on the floor for sure. And we did last year, too. This is kind of my, this is my favorite beer that we make just because of, it's like, you know, you find this barrel, it's so great, and then you kind of take it one step further and, you know, it's like that very, I love complexity. I love adding one more ingredient. I'm terrible as a cook. I am the worst about adding like four extra things at the end. and I love gimmicky beers. And I mean, I hate even calling them gimmicky beers, but I love that when people just put three extra words on it. You know, when you're reading a beer and it's like, that's eight words. I'm like, those are the beers that I love.
That's right.
And, yeah, so you'll definitely be able to taste it there. I think I have it there. I think it's even at What the Funk, maybe.
Awesome.
I'm sure Justin at the Star Bar will have it. You know, Chris at the Falling Rock. I mean, I'm sure it will be everywhere.
Great.
Now I can see where Jay has taken a lot of cues from you, Lauren, as you probably already know. But naming their beers is clearly one of those things, because each of their beers is like a sentence. The names, you know.
Complexity is not a vice.
I love the names.
Is that your latest?
The Rare Barrel Beers.
No, but that is a good name. I was just saying that complexity is not a vice.
Oh, my gosh. And thanks. I just got to taste your new ginger Sour Tooth.
Mm. Sour Tooth Tiger.
Yes.
Still
oh
for sale.
Gosh.
At the Rare Barrel this weekend.
So good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It means a lot. Yeah, it means a lot coming from you, definitely.
Well, we just had a bottle share at my house a couple weeks ago, and my friend Rachel from Oakland brought it for us. And, yeah, it definitely, you know, in the midst of, you know, 40 people just, you know, running around the house trying to make sure that they don't miss that, I snuck it ever so quietly out, poured myself an entire glass. So green. Oh, so that's like the cardinal sin of bottle shares, but poured myself the whole glass. And then I quietly announced the Rare Barrels over here.
Right. For Lauren, it's not a bottle share. It's just a bottle. There's no share.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I almost didn't bring it out. Now that is the worst when you do that. At a bottle
wow.
share,
it is
the very
that good.
Back of the fridge.
It's that good. Well, I do have one more question for you as it pertains to adjuncts, since that beer has such a pronounced ginger character, and it's maybe not odd, but has either of you ever had a beer that uses ginger as an adjunct?
I'm making one right this.
Oh,
minute.
You are.
Ooh.
Okay, well, great. Well,
but it's not a sour beer. It's for the Lips of Faith series. It's called paired ginger beer. I'm making a ginger beer, the intention is for it to be a great beer and then an amazing mixer.
Mm. Oh,
mixer.
Totally. Well, and my question was, is there any? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot, but is there any adjunct you would say you wouldn't want to use that? I mean,
durian.
Oh yeah. Who was talking about that recently?
Everybody. That's like the funny. thing, because, you know, you're like, you, I feel like we have put every single thing in a beer at this point. I mean, you name it, we have tried to make a beer with it. And my friend Alex Johnson in North Carolina and I, we went on a durian hunt because he was sure that we should make a durian beer. And when we finally got it, I was positive that we should not.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
I've never been so sure of anything. And I you know what? 24 hours later, in my mouth, I was still sure. Oh, it does not go away.
Yuck. You know who was talking about it very recently on one of our other shows? Was Dan Gordon, who was saying that for new Gordon Biersch employees, they haze them by making them taste, having like durian yogurt, durian ice cream. They take them out to like an, you know, all expenses paid dinner at like a Thai joint, and then for dessert, they force them to consume durian. And if you can survive that, you can work at Gordon Biersch. But you can't make a new Belgian beer, apparently.
I'm gonna go with no. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tough to source new ingredients, fun stuff for craft beers, because there's so many craft breweries and only so many things to put in beer. But 10 years from now, what do you see as the future of the New Belgium Sour Project? You know, what's the next wave for you guys? What are you guys going to be working on?
Well, I wanted to tell you that tonight at 6 o'clock we took the coffee beans.
Oh.
Off of the beer. Jay and I, we both New Belgium and the Rare Barrel both have made coffee sours before, and we've been doing cold pressed. And I emailed them the other day and talked about just whole beans. We started it by doing whole beans, but Jay was kind enough to give me a lot of very, very specifics, and so we just made 20 barrels of this of the Oscar worthy coffee. And I think that was super fun. And I love figuring, like, when you're tasting beer, there's always like these little notes in them, and what does that remind you of? What can that go with? What can that do? But to be honest, for me, the future of our wood cellar program is I really would like to make more Lafalie. I think that I love making one-offs. I absolutely adore it. I love that. But for me, when I go into a beer bar and, like I see, what's the sour on? You know, there's always like the old standbys, and I would love it if you could go into a beer bar and, in Philadelphia, you could go to the Monk's Cafe and, Tom Peters would be like, you'd walk in and you'd see Lafalie and you're like, oh, good old Lafalie. I'd love for it to kind of be like an institution, just like, oh, if you're a beer bar and you want, it's like the Guinness handle or the
Sierra Nevada Pale Ale sour beer.
Yeah, exactly. Like the obligatory sour. Oh, and people almost like get tired of it. I don't mean to say that in a bad way.
Obligatory, but exceptional.
Yeah.
I just want to keep making. I just think that style, as we get weirder and put all these great crazy things in beers, like, I am always focusing in how to make more Lafalie. And that to me is, I feel like that's the future for me, is to keep making sure that the foundation of the whole wood cellar doesn't get rocked by, all the shiny things that are out there.
Definitely.
I look forward to that world one day where you go, you go to Vegas and it's pretty barren. They'll have Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, they'll have Sam Adams, they'll have Lafalie. But other than that, you're really not going to find much.
There's a couple of those beers right now that, they might or might not come from Belgium. And I'm kind of gunning for them.
That's great. Take over those tap handles. And, as a small producer of sour beer, we're all for it. We want that beer as the leader, as the flagship, getting the word out there. And, you're a terrific spokesperson for the sour beer movement. And we're happy to be, riding on your coattails in this sense. But,
Peter is, it's just a funny, the concept of that, when Peter started the whole thing and, we should make sour beer. And, 97, I distinctly remember being like, I have no idea what this guy is talking about, but I want to be here for this.
That's awesome. Well, Lauren, you know, we've taken up probably too much of your time already. You've been an awesome guest. We're so excited to have you. If you have time, we've got a question from the chat.
Yes, let's have Lauren help us answer this. Let's see. It is from Gay Kyle. He said, will leaving the beer on the yeast and trub during the duration of aging have a negative effect on sour beer?
In the bottle?
I think he means probably in a carboy.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yes. Okay, what kind of negative effect?
Well, caprylic acid, for one, I would say is a really bad... for us, like that, I learned that was, you asked me, like, what are the things I learned the hard way, mistakes I made? I was so terrified to drain the fooders for years because I thought for sure, like, I'll fully drain them. I was sure that I would drain the magic, as we talked about, out of it. And, you know, one day I was, you know, I'm using a barrel and it was about 60 hectoliter barrel and about 40 hectoliters into it, like solid matter started kind of coming out of it. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is a lot of troop. Like that is a lot of yeast. You know, that is a lot of protein, polyphenol, dead yeast, bad things. And in that one barrel, I would, every single time that it would kind of start to go sour, it would definitely kick off a lot of autolysis notes. And it, you know, duh, no, you know, of course it was. So yeah, I would absolutely say that that's not great. But if you're, you know, if caprylic acid will go back to ethyl caprylate, if you're via Brettanomyces esterification, if you're that lucky.
Yeah. So what you may want to do if you're doing this on the homebrew scale is rack to a secondary, and then make sure it's a glass carboy. You know, get a good airlock on that. There'd be a little gas produced, but you know, definitely maybe put a fresh pitch of Brett in there and just kind of let it settle out, but not on top of this mountain of trub and yeast that's going to die eventually.
What about, because even in the secondary, won't you develop even a little trub in that carboy too?
Sure.
So how do you, I mean, is that bad? I mean, is any bad? Should you rack to a third dairy?
No, I mean, you know.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you're good there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all in the amounts, you know, all in the volume. So a little bit can be a nice flavor in sour beer and something that you're used to in most sour beers. But to, you know, excessive is just that, it's excessive. I mean, you know, Lauren, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, some of the beers you guys are making at New Belgium are, lagers to start. Yeah. And those drop, you know, pretty clear. And then you're also, are you filtering going into the fooder?
Absolutely filter. We did, in the beginning of the experiments, we did filtered and unfiltered beer into the barrels. And, you know, that were unfiltered, the off flavors that you would have to wait for, you know, you're just like that time that you're waiting for caprylic acid, waiting for, you know, ethyl, and then unfortunately all those acids, they have to go somewhere and then they get rebound and then they might turn into very screeching ethyl acetate, you know, things like that, and that's no good. Or, you know, like just so much of that ester profile. I don't enjoy it at all. But yeah, that, and so immediately the ones that we filtered or even centrifuged is what we do. Those are amazing.
Awesome.
And instant gratification, immediate start of acidification is what you want.
Great. Well, Lauren, I want to thank you for coming on what I'll call this the sour hour and a half. We had to go long because you're that good.
There's too much.
I wanted, you know, as many people as possible to hear you talk about this stuff because, you know, I say a little jokingly, but you really are a craft brewing legend and, you know, one of the nicest people in craft beer.
No. The nicest person in craft beer.
The nicest
beer,
person.
Making the best sour
beer
on the planet.
The most sour beer.
Hottest, don't forget that.
The hottest chicken brewing,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait, and I will see you in a couple days, probably.
Yeah, let's get drunk next weekend.
Yeah, you know it. Walt's already got the call in. I'll see you like on Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, Lauren.
All right. Thanks, guys, for everything. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks for sending the beer out. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. That's Lauren Salazar from New Belgium Brewing Company. Worth the hype. I mean, come on. Lauren is the best. And, I know she's gone now, so I can say what I really mean. She really is the best. She is. And, I've met other people who have met Lauren, and I kind of get the same story over and over again, and it's my story too, where they'll say, oh yeah, Lauren's the best. She sat down with me for like 30 minutes and just talked to me, and I was no one. Like, she didn't know where my brewery is, who I was. She doesn't care. She wants to genuinely help everyone in the craft brewing industry. If you're having a good sour beer tonight, it's due to Lauren Salazar. She has advanced so many young brewers' knowledge and palates on sour beer and sensory. It's incredible.
Well, you were nobody when you befriended her, weren't you?
I was a nobody.
That was before the Red Barrel, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Lauren and I met when I was still working at the brewery. The brewery was actually kind enough to send me out to Chicago to Siebel Institute to take their short course on starting a sensory analysis program.
One of our fine sponsors, Siebel
Absolutely.
Institute.
Great, great school. The Goose Island Pub is right down the street for lunch break, so I definitely recommend attending. And
not one of our fine sponsors. I can't agree.
Okay.
But, you can listen to Jay if you want.
I mean, it's a side perk of going to Siebel, basically, So, great school, and she was one of my teachers, and learned a lot, and I've seen her at Great American Beer Festival, CBC, this past year, and she's just so generous with her time, and I couldn't be happier that she was one of our first guests on the Sour Hour, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren, for your time. I feel privileged for having been in your virtual presence.
Absolutely.
I was in her actual presence at the Tour de Fat, New Belgium's bike-centric festival that came to San Francisco a couple weeks back. And she was there, and a very sweet lady. The hottest chicken beer.
Hottest chicken beer.
And
Lauren Salazar.
She's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I know we're way over time, Scott, but yeah. A couple things that I just wanted to put a cherry on this episode, if it's cool. Last episode, I was talking a little bit about the recipes we do at the Rare Barrel.
Yes.
I listened back, and I was just not very clear with what our recipes are, so I just want to clean that up a little bit now in case, there's any homebrewers out there who want to try out our malt bills. So basically, we build our recipes off of each other. So it all starts with our gold recipe. Very loosely based on a lambic malt bill. And I say loosely, even that's very loose. So it's about 12 Plato or 1048 specific gravity. 70% of the recipe is base malt. Pick your poison on that one. 12% malted wheat, 6% rolled oats, 6% spelt malt. And if that's too hard for you guys to get, because that's kind of a hard to get malt, you can just replace that with wheat. And then a 6% of special aromatic, which is different from regular aromatic. We get it from Franco Belge. And then our red recipe, which is kind of loosely based off a Flemish red, is 14 Plato. It's the same as the gold, but we add C60 at the same volume as the oats, the spelt, and the special aromatic. We do a color adjustment on that also. It's about 1% of the grist as a dehusk black. Use that at your discretion to get the right amount of color you want. And then our dark recipe, which is kind of loosely based off Oud Bruin. And that's the recipe we did for some of you might have had our beer, Shadows of the Rise, which actually won a bronze at World Beer Cup for the style of Oud Bruin. That recipe is about 16 Plato. Again, same as the red, but we're just adding one malt, and that's chocolate malt, same volume as the C60, the oats, the spelt, the special and aromatic, and then, again, just a 1% dehusk black on that. So that's one thing I wanted to wrap up from last episode. The other is just, I realized that listening to some of the BN shows, you guys all had guests on the session, and, Can You Brew It, and things like that, and some people out there, they can't get the beers that you guys are talking about. Like we were talking about this new NBB Love Leopold's. That's why I asked Lauren about it. Is like, can people get this if they're going to GABF? One thing I wanted to talk about real quick is just, you know, we're going to talk a lot about rare barrel beers on the show. And a great way to get them is to sign up for our membership club, which is just coming. The first year is kind of coming to its end. And the next year signups are just about to start for people who are not members already. So that's going to be September 30th. It's a Tuesday at 8 a.m. You get 10 bottles of sour beer. You also get the first right to purchase any of our other brands. If you don't live in California, we still allow you to get a membership. You just have to have, you have to come and pick them up by a certain time or have a trustee who does live in California. So if you're hearing us talk about sour beers, you're a fan of sour beers, I encourage you to visit our blog, therarebarrel.com/blog, and get some more information on that. But that's just a bunch of info I wanted to spurt out there from wrap up from the last episode. But I don't know. Episode number two. I know we ran long, but how do you think it went, Scott?
I think it was awesome. What's not to like? We have these great new Belgian beers in front of us, and including you know a couple that are hard to find or impossible to find. And Lauren's the woman, and you're the man, can I say?
Yeah. Well, this is what I think we should do next. Let's sign off. So we can finish off these great sour beers from Lauren in New Belgium. How's that sound?
I could not agree more. Let me do a little Brewing Network plugging as long as on the heels of the Rare Barrel stuff there. Please visit the Brewing Network store. Anything you purchase there goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network and keeps programming like this on the air and keeps us developing new programming and allowing you fine folks to hear people like Jay.
Yeah. Well, thanks you guys for listening. Stay tuned for episode 3. Probably be in about a month. I say we do a double episode next time. Two guests. What do you think?
Oh, man. Yeah. If you line them up, I knock them down.
All right. Let's do it. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Sour Hour. We'll see you next time. Stay sour.